Hey everyone, it's Jerome Parker, aka Master Shake. This is season 2, episode 3 of the Code Life podcast. I am here with Mark Thompson. How are you doing, Mark?
Yo, I am so good and I'm so happy to be here.
Good, good. How was your New Year's?
New Year's was phenomenal. I got some really quality family time. I work a lot, so to be able to just be down and just be with the family was awesome.
Awesome, awesome. Good, good. So, I've actually been wanting to speak with you for a while. Why don't you tell everyone about yourself, what you currently do, and then go into how you got started.
Yeah, so I work at Google. I am on the Angular team, and I'm a developer relations engineer. So that's developer relations in general, but you know, the developer relations engineer is a new way we're kind of classifying this role, as we have a really interesting mix of like technical responsibilities and then the other parts of being in DevRel, which include community building, you know, learning about what people need, etc. So I'm doing that role, and I forgot the other part of the question. You said, what am I doing now?
Yeah.
I think you had the other part. Yeah.
And then how did you get started? How long have you been in tech? We'll start with that.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, so I've been in tech for quite a bit. So probably 15 or 16 years professionally. So I got my first job right out of grad school way back in like early 2000s. So I got my first job around 2005 or 2006. And where I got started was really random. When I was a little kid, I remember wanting to get a computer. And I grew up on the south side of Chicago. So, you know, we didn't really have a lot of resources. So, but I remember in my heart of hearts, like, man, if my parents could just find a way to get me a computer, because I really want to have it ask me what I want to do when I wake up, right? So kind of like what we call now like artificial intelligence. But back then I didn't know anything about that. I was just a little kid. And I was like, yeah, I wanted to ask me what game I want to play and what cereal I want for breakfast. And I want to figure out how to make it do that. And so I was trying to describe how to like write code way back then. And, you know, my parents, I wish they were still here so I could ask them how they managed to get me a computer, considering our, you know, really like extreme situation of facing housing insecurity, lots of food insecurity. And then they still found a way to get me a computer. And yeah, that is what took things off. But what's really, really funny, people don't believe this part of the story, is that when I was in high school, I had a chance to take a programming class and I actually was failing the class. And it wasn't because I couldn't do it. I guess I think I was too focused on the girls, to be honest with you. And so I wasn't like giving it my best effort. And my high school programming teacher said, you know, you need to stay after school and you need to make up some of these assignments that you've missed. Get some extra credit because I don't want to have to fail you. And that's where I got my real deep love for programming. And I started writing basic code with the basic programming language. I started writing code with that. Nice. And I never looked back.
Nice. Nice, nice. Okay. So take us through your process of getting to Google.
Whew. So yeah, I believe that you can really set yourself up for success based on how you kind of approach things, right? So way back in 2017, I saw that Flutter was really popping off. I was like, you know what? I think this thing is going to be the future for mobile development. So I got involved with like writing code for Flutter. I built my first like mobile app, everything. And I started doing this in public so people could see what the process was like, so they could see the story. And that is how I got kind of involved with some people at Google, right? So just meeting people in the community, meeting other people on the Flutter team, et cetera. And then what ended up happening was a good friend of mine who was a university instructor at the same time that I was when I was teaching at Northwestern, he had got an email like, hey, you know, do you want to work on the Flutter team? And then he was like, I'm not a good fit for this, but I know a guy who is. And he referred me. And then that's when I started the intense 3 to 4 month process of getting ready for Google.
Nice. Yeah, so talk about the Google process. I've interviewed with Google. I've literally interviewed for Google every year since 2012. And at this point, I don't even get nervous anymore. But tell for people who haven't interviewed at Google before, tell them how your process was, like how many rounds, the difficulty of the questions, if you even remember, stuff like that.
Yeah, so it was a really long process because everything was happening in the middle of the, in the beginning of the pandemic. So I started the whole process in March. So that's when nationwide shutdown started happening. People started going on quarantine. So I was doing everything at home and I was just studying and studying and studying. Then I had the phone screen, which as most people who have tried to, you know, the Google process or any of the fan companies, the phone screen is actually one of the most intimidating parts because most people can't get past the phone screen. And, you know, and that's how it's usually a big challenge for folks. And so leading up to the phone screen, in my mind, I was just like, yo, if I even get the fact that I got to the phone screen after doing all the fit calls where they try to see, should we continue with you? Right. I was like, if I get to the phone screen, no matter what, I'm happy because I'm going to come back next year when I'm ready. It's what I told myself. I was like, I'll be ready next year because this year, you know, I'm just going to try it just to try it. And then I got past the phone screen and I was like, what is this life? I cannot believe that that just happened. And then even at that point, I was like, you know what? If this is the end, I can tell everybody I passed a Google phone screen. So whatever else happens after this, I don't really care because I passed the Google phone screen. Then I had some more fit calls that I had to go through because one thing you'll find out about Google is that sometimes, you know, when they're hiring, the roles will either go away or they'll have to like say, well, we actually have a need on this team. Would you want to go to that team instead? And so I just started like having to talk to different people to figure out if I was a good fit for their team. And then I got to do a couple of practice interviews, which was very helpful. So I got to see what my biggest like area of improvement was. And I can tell you right now that one of the hardest things to do is to be fast enough. Because what you really want to do is what I found is that you really want to. So in my interview, for example, you know, there is an hour per like interview and then 30 minutes were a certain set of questions and 30 minutes were dedicated to a code challenge. Right. And they want you to kind of be able to get that 15 minutes for that first solution. It doesn't have to be the perfect solution, but you kind of want to get that first solution in like 15 minutes. And that's hard when you're not really trained mentally to like solve problems like that, you know, in that type of speed. And that's a big challenge. And so that was one of my big things that I had to take away from. And I practiced that. I literally practiced my brute force within 15 minutes. And I just kept practicing that. And then I had my final interview once I get past the phone screen and the other fit calls. I did the final interview, which was for me because I was going into DevRel. It was 5.5 hours, including so it was like a presentation round and then 5 hours of technical interviews.
Yep, sounds about right. Yeah, that was I haven't done any DevRel, but you know, I've done senior software engineering. I got a position at Apple. One of the hardest interviews I ever did. Felt really good. I couldn't believe I passed and got the job. I've made it to the final round at Google multiple times, but I haven't gotten the offer. This last time that I did a few months ago, basically just came down. They basically told me that they chose between me and somebody else, and basically that person was just more efficient than I was, but. You know, so like, but yeah, and when at Facebook, I had to do a 5-hour interview, and like, I was mentally like mush after that. So what advice would you give to, well, before I ask that question, in 2021 currently, what advice would you give to people who are looking to learn to code and get into tech? And secondly, what advice would you give to people who they've already learned, but now they're looking for their first job?
Oh, great questions. Both of those. Okay. So if you want to learn right now, I'm going to take it from the point of view of somebody who's probably trying to go maybe the bootcamp route, right? Or some other alternative program route. Which is totally fine. I taught boot camps before. I love boot camps. I'm a big believer in those. But before you even do that, please do me a favor and try some of the free resources first and make sure that you like it enough to be able to do it for 40 hours a week, you know, for every week, as long as you work as an engineer, because you might find that software development might not be what you want, or you may find that you do want it, but before you go and sign, you know, any agreements or like sign up for a bootcamp and spend all this money, make sure you want to do it. And it's not about like if you have a passion for it. I'm not saying that, like I'm not making that argument. I'm saying make the argument of make sure that you won't hate your job, right? That you can actually come and like actually do it. And if you feel like it's a good fit, something you really want to do. Because I find that some people get into this, like I've had multiple students who would get in the middle of a 6-month program and then they find that they actually don't like programming and they want to quit the program. But guess what? You've already like paid this expensive tuition and now you're kind of stuck with that. You know what I mean? And so I'd rather you go do the free stuff, like do Code Academy, do free Code Camp, do as much free stuff, see if you like it. That's the first step. Then I definitely recommend you try, you know, either a boot camp if you feel like you need more structure. There are a lot of programs out there that are the type of programs that you can do self-paced, where you don't have to do it like necessarily through like one of these boot camps, like Udacity, for instance. Udacity has some really great like programs and they have some great relationships with different employers. So that's an option. But then I definitely say, then you go through it, but be willing to like really push yourself, because it is a hard road when you do an accelerated program. Like it takes a lot of your like mental energy and it takes a lot of just time as well, because you're going to be learning to think in a different way. And I think that's a part of it that people, you know, aren't always prepared for, that it's a different way of solving problems. But they can totally do it. They just have to like make the adjustment. And that can be hard for people. Now, what advice would I give to somebody who's trying to get that first job? So this is going to be, you know, take everything I say with a grain of salt, because of course some of it is survivor biased, right? Because my first job out of grad school, I can say what I did, which was I applied for every job that I was remotely qualified for. That was the first step. Like if someone said, oh, we need a senior Java developer, and I was not a senior Java developer, but I was like, I know Java, so I'm going to apply. And I probably didn't get a call back from half of those jobs, but I just kept applying. So I believe that some of it is going to be a little bit about volume. Like I applied to jobs on every site that I could think of. And the place that people never think of that there are lots of jobs is Craigslist. And there are lots of like actual programming jobs that you can find, because people don't want to pay the fee for LinkedIn. They don't want to pay ZipRecruiter or these other sites, and they don't want to pay those commissions. So they just self-posted on Craigslist. And I got my first job off of Craigslist, my first career job. That job turned out to be garbage, but I got my first job off of Craigslist. So, you know, you do have to kind of be mindful what you find there, but there's a lot of options there. And I'd also say, you know, your story is really important. What's the story of why you're going to be a good fit? I think a lot of people, especially people who go for that first job after a boot camp, they feel like they need to totally erase everything from their previous life before code. And I think that's a mistake. I think what makes you really compelling is that I don't have to teach you how to work, because you already know how to work. You already know how to be a professional, and you probably have skills in an industry that you can transfer over to software development. And I think that people never tell that story. They just show like their bootcamp portfolio and they think that's the whole story. And I'm like, no, tell the whole story. Like when they ask you questions, frame it based on that experience that you had, that you can say, yeah, I know about this, and here's how that will inform my code. Here's how that will inform my problem solving. And I think that makes you really compelling.
Nice. Well, we're going to take a quick break from our sponsors. And when we come back, I'm going to ask Mark what his plans are for the future and just any more overall advice that we give to some young aspiring engineers. We'll be right back. Tired of doing technical interviews and rounds of them? TripleByte is a platform that allows you to take one technical interview and have companies such as Apple, Microsoft, and Facebook bid on you for a job. Click on the link in the show notes to get started for free. It is always free, and offers will come to you in your mailbox. Click to get started. And we're back. So, Mark, you are at Google. I didn't ask how old you were.
Oh, I'll be 40 in June, so I'm 39 and a half about, but I'm really trying to embrace this 40 thing, so.
Cool. So you're 40, and you've been in the game for what, about 15 years now?
Yep, about 15 years, yep.
All right, cool. So where do you see yourself in the next 10 years? I mean, you're already at a FANG company, so, you know, for like, that's already a flex right there. You know, a lot of people, their whole career goals is to end up at a FANG company. So what for you, what's beyond Google? Where do you see yourself in the next 10 to 15 years?
That's an amazing question, because I was talking to somebody about this who also joined a FANG company recently. And we were talking about how before we got to our respective positions, that was the top of the mountain, just getting in, right? It was like, yo, I made it and this is enough. But I think what you find is that if, at least when you're like me, because I'm a really ambitious person, I'm always looking for the next set of stairs. So I reached this, you know, this platform, I climbed this ladder, and now I'm looking for the next set of stairs. So I think there are a few things that I see in 10 to 15 years. I think there's a heavy focus on philanthropy for me, going back, you know, just to continue to do stuff. One of the things that I loved to do before all of this, like, COVID stuff happened, I loved going to high schools and talking to kids, especially high schools and neighborhoods like the one I came from, because you don't really see a lot of people who look like us at Google and then be able to say, hey, you know, I came from like the hood, because that's where I came from, gangbangers, drug dealers, like that was my neighborhood. So I didn't come from like a privileged background. So I like to go back. And that's actually how I got into wearing Jordans when I present, because I noticed that the kids would respond better when they saw that my shoes were fly. Well, when I dressed up, they didn't really pay attention. But then when they saw my shoes, they like, oh man, dude got on some like nice J's. Oh, he got those 13s on, and they would pay attention. So that's how I actually got into my whole like, oh, gold chain and Jordans, is to be authentic and then let them know that, hey, I'm still a regular person. So I think I want to do so much more of that and like help people, you know, just really get into tech from that point of view. And just really offer whatever like privilege that I have now as a Google, like you said, you know, a part of my story now is already, you know, elevated because of this positioning. So when I tell somebody I'm at Google, I'm an engineering at Google, it already opens up doors. So I want to use that to do some stuff. I think there's also, I don't know if I'm going to be writing code in 15 years directly, right? Like, I think that I would love to be, I mean, the dream is to somehow get a successful company going. I tried that in 2017 to 2020. I have my company Totally Strong. It did not take off the way that I wanted. I think there are more companies in my future, more ideas. So I think that that's a big possibility for me, is to be an entrepreneur full time. Because one thing I really want to do is redefine resources and like benefits at companies. Because I think that people put the wrong focus on the wrong things. Like a lot of startups and ones I've worked for, you know, they always hype up like, oh yeah, you can drink at the job. Yeah, so I'm lifetime sober. So I don't drink alcohol at all. Never have. So that was never a benefit for me, that we go to the bar together as a group. But you know what's really interesting to me? Let's get, you know, the birthing partner a year off of work, and then the non-birthing partner, right, 6 months. So they can bond with the kid. See, that's interesting to me. Let's like really subsidize healthcare, you know, and let's do these types of things that makes working here like really worth it. That's what like my dream company will become. And I think that working at Google, I get to see a lot of this stuff that is out there, like some of what the benefits look like. But I still think there are benefits that people don't take in consideration. Just like, for instance, think about how many more people will probably be in tech if we could do better with daycare.
Yeah, facts. That's funny. Like, that's really funny you brought that up. So I was talking with my partner yesterday and was telling her, we're talking about my company, JCareer Solutions, and I just hired on 2 new employees, and I'm about to start offering benefits through my payroll provider. And I'm going to be doing the standard healthcare and stuff, but I was telling her that I wanted to do alternative benefits such as you know, reimbursement for going to the chiropractor and doing like preventative alternative medicine, stuff like that. You know, the stronger reimbursements for education expenses. Like, I've never required any of my people to work in an office, but I do have, I bought some real estate and I bought a tiny house, turned that into an office space. So they have a space they can come through if they want. But yeah, I was like, I really want my employees to enjoy working for me. And I think, you know, pay can only motivate somebody so much, you know, especially right. in engineering. After we make six figures, we don't really give a damn about, you know, like you'd be like, yeah, we're making $250,000. Like, that feels great when you're signing the contract, but then 6 months in, you're used to it. So, you know.
Right. That's really very true. That's really true. Yeah. First, I want to say congratulations on hiring the two people, by the way. That's phenomenal. And then thank also you. On just like expanding with the real estate, bro, that is outstanding. Good for you.
Thank you. But yeah, like, as you said, you know, you said you don't see yourself doing as much coding in 15 years. Since I've been able to like get more clients and hire people, I've been doing more of the CEO role. And I've just naturally noticed that I have been coding less. And when I am coding, I'm coding more on, like, you know, I have a couple app startups in addition to Jake Pierce Solutions that I'm getting off the ground. It feels good, you know, like I've been able to go back to coding as a hobby instead of coding for clients or on the job. I feel like a kid again. It also does feel strange at the same time. Like, I'm like, oh man, I'm not clocking in 40 hours. But yeah, that, like, as I want, like, I'm building up all my companies to pass on to my children. Like, that's my whole goal. By the time that they are 18, they can, you know, they have a source of funding and they can go out into the world and do whatever they want. If that's school, great. That's, you know, traveling and, you know, writing poetry, so be it. I don't really care. So right now where you're at, trying to leave, are you in the Bay?
I will be. Okay. We were supposed to be in the Bay already, but COVID ruins everything. So
yeah. Right. So I left the Bay
in September.
I left the Bay in 2017. So, you know, and when I left the Bay, I still had Jake Pierce Solutions. Like, I was doing contracting through Sephora and stuff through my company. So I had already had my company or whatever. But when I left the Bay, I had decided, you know, at that point, I'm going to stop working for big companies and doing like the 40-hour freelancing thing and start, you know, building my own products and stuff of that nature. So, you know, where you're at, you know, I know you just got at Google and you're seeing yourself in the next 15 years trying to, you know, become more entrepreneurial. What steps are you taking right now, back, you know, back in the context of you being in a FANG corporation and you do have the for the future, but you know, you're going to stay at Google at least for a while, because for, if not for anything else, just to build up capital so you can start your futures and your endeavors in the future. So what are you, what are you doing now? What are the baby steps? Because I think a lot of people, when they think entrepreneurship, they think leap of faith, and you got to do everything at once. And I mean, you can. That's a pretty hectic way of going about it with a high failure rate. But, you know, the better option is to take incremental steps over, preferably, you're planning this stuff over, you know, over the course of a few months to a few years. So, you know, what advice would you give to people? And what are you doing now to plant the seeds for, you know, 2025, 2026, when you start your own venture?
Yeah, no, great question. So I think that one of the biggest mistakes that people can make, in my personal opinion, is that you jump before you have like enough revenue to sustain something, because you jump so you can focus all your time on it. And I don't see it, because I think about this. I think about healthcare as an important staple. As long as, you know, healthcare is not universal, it's tied to a job for the most part, right? And so because of that, you need good benefits. Now, for me, it's not even a possibility with a wife and a child. Like, I'm not about to put them at risk for my own ambition. Like, that, the time for that passed for me. Like, when I was 20 or 25, between 20 and 25, if I was going to jump, that's what I should have did, to jump, to just live off of ramen noodles and live in a cardboard box, right? Like, in a tiny closet apartment. But that time has passed me. So now what I need to do is, one, not focus on perfection with whatever I'm going to launch next, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was, I think, a mistake that I made when I was launching Totally Strong, is that instead of, like, really getting, and this sounds so pre-recorded, because I heard this story on the Indie Hackers podcast. I heard this story on every business podcast you can think of, which is build something, get it out there, get validation, monetize immediately, right? That is the strategy. I did not follow that with Totally Strong, because in my mind, I was thinking, yeah, of course, people are going to love it because they love me, which is a mistake. Do not fall into that mistake either. Mm-hmm. Thinking that, like, your personal brand is enough to carry sales. It is when you've already made it. Like Gary Vaynerchuk, right? Like, his personal brand can drive traffic to his funnels because he's already made it. He's already rich. He already has, like, that bad thing. Somebody like myself, I have, like,
you get to that followers. Point, money don't really matter.
Say it again. So,
I said, once you get to that point, like I said earlier, money doesn't even really matter to you. So,
exactly. Yeah. Money doesn't even matter at that point. And so when I was doing Totally Strong, I thought that, you know, I didn't want to charge any money, because I was like, yeah, let me just. And Totally Strong is a fitness app. Let me just, for people who don't know, it's a fitness app where I was trying to build this community where you can go and share workouts with each other, find your trainers, etc. I thought, oh, well, I'll monetize once the people come. Right. And then I monetized. I should have just monetized in the beginning. And my total plan should have been about around monetization. Can't even say that word today. So baby steps now is my next thing. I'm thinking about, how do I charge up front and how do I add value up front? Where there's enough value so that I can charge and that people are like, yeah, I see the value here. So, yes, I'm going to pay for this thing. Right. So, like, that's the baby step to think about now. And then I learned a lot of stuff from launching Totally Strong, like how to, you know, set up all your stuff early, like set up your email list early, set up your email address, and just kind of get going and don't waste money on stuff. So I'm not going to waste money on designers like I did. Not that designers are a waste. I spent money before I had my full idea on design. Right. So I didn't even know what I was getting them to design for me. So I paid money for stuff. And then I tried to cheap out. That's another look. I could talk all about this stuff. Let me just break this part down too. I also paid for my design multiple times because I cheaped out, because I didn't want to pay, let's say, $3,000 to $5,000 to get, like, a, you know, designer to go through and do, like, use case studies with me and get, like, a really good design. I was like, yo, what can I get for $500? So what I got for $500, I didn't even like. And then guess what? I had to pay somebody else $500. To do it again. And I didn't like what they did because I was trying to, like, you know, cut the corners because of the shoestring budget. But then what I probably should have did was, if I'm looking back, instead of worrying about the design, once I got that first design, I should have just ran with it and tried to get some money generated. But too much perfectionism.
Yes, that is whenever I take on MVP projects for clients who, you know, they need an app or a website or whatever, you know, it's the first thing I tell them. I was like, look, just remember Facebook. When Facebook first came out, it was ugly as shit.
Mm-hmm. You know,
but you iterate often. So you can have your dream design idea, but just break it up over 12 months, because you need to really focus on the functionality first. And then we can add stuff here and there, but that is something that I think that I do hear, like, a lot of successful people at one point or another struggle with that. And I think that's just a lesson that you have to learn. I think that's just one of those, like, tribal things that entrepreneurs go through, because it just seems to be a consistent thing that I hear from startup founders.
But I think it's because you think you're different. Right.
Yeah.
Like you think you're different than the last person. So that might have happened to Mary, but it's not going to happen to me because I'm different. And that is like a huge fallacy, like, or my community stronger, a huge fallacy. Right. Like, all these things that you think separate you actually don't. Right. Like, you want to separate yourself, put your product out, make some money. That's what separates you. That's what builds your momentum. And again, this is my point of view. Like, these are the lessons that I'm going to take in for my next ventures, for the next products. It's like, no. Just make some money first. If it's not making money, I think you are not optimizing your time.
Right. My last question that I have for you is, what advice do you have just in general for people who are currently in the field? Let's talk more about on Black engineers. You know, there's not a whole lot of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I read this paper, I think it was in Yahoo, and it said if you took all of the senior engineers from Google, Apple, Microsoft, Airbnb, it was a couple other, you know, ones, and put up, they would all fit on a 747 and there'd still be room on the plane. And I remember when I read that, I was at Apple and I was a senior engineer at Apple, and I'm like, damn, I'd be on that plane. People don't understand the psychological and emotional impact being the only person has on you, being the only Black person in a very white and Asian dominated field. That breaks a lot of people. You know, that is a big reason that a lot of people leave tech, because they don't feel comfortable. So what give to people who you know, they're minorities in tech, and how do you deal with the emotional and mental aspect of being a minority in tech?
So I've always been one of two or the only one my entire, because I lived in a Black neighborhood in high school, there were more Black programmers in my classes, but some of those kids were just taking a class, right, to fill out their requirements. And just, there were a few of us who were going on to try to pursue this as a career. Then when I got to college, I was the only Black engineer in most of my classes, if not all my classes. In grad school, I was the only Black TA in the whole computer science program when I was in grad school. And somebody even said, I didn't even know Black people could be engineering TAs. And I think that was hyperbole, but it's because they had never even seen it. Right. And so I kind of had that thicker skin around it early on. And my ambition was just like, yo, I'm just going to try to be the best that I can. So I'd always kind of focus like blinders on that. And, you know, but that doesn't mean that the problems weren't there. So, for example, I was talking to my wife about this recently, is that, you know, if I didn't get a job in engineering from like a company I interviewed for, I never said it was because I was Black, because I had conditioned myself to think that it's because I wasn't good enough. And that totally could have obfuscated the fact that I was being discriminated against. But I had that mindset of like, I just have to be better than everybody else. And that's why they didn't hire me. But once I kind of realized that this was a problem, that people were actively discriminating against other people, how did I start to handle that type of stuff? You know, the advice I give to people is, don't water yourself down to make other people feel comfortable. And I don't do that. Like I say, you know, about the whole gold chain and Jordans, like, no matter what stage I'm on, no matter who I'm talking to, I still wear the same thing. Like, even when we had an internal event at Google, I had my chain and my Jordans on at the event, right? And I wasn't gonna hide my authentic self. And I think that gives me like a lot of freedom to not feel like I need to shrink to fit in with other people. But then there's this other pressure to like always be ready to call people out on like ridiculous stuff that they say or do. And that is hard. And I don't know a good answer for that. How to like handle, because it's like you're in a meeting and you're just waiting for somebody to say something stupid to you. Like, oh, so Marky Mark from the hood, huh? You know what I mean? Like something that they think is innocuous, but it's right. Not, right? Like microaggressions, right? So you're kind of always on edge about that. Like you're always like, damn, now I got to be the person to call this person out or be ready to go to HR at any minute because somebody might like act up. And that's just the hard thing, that like until things change, you kind of have to really take care of yourself outside of work to be able to handle that part of work. So do the recharging things that you do. Remember why you're there and the value that you're adding not only the team, but to the other people who will look at you and be like, yo, because they can do it, I can do it. Like, I love to see people who feel like, man, if he can do it, yo, I can do this. I want to do this. I believe I can do it because I can see it. So that kind of energizes me to keep going. When I do get tired of just like always being the only Black person, always having to explain things that are like culturally relevant to, like, let's say Black people or people of color. And then somebody who's not in that group, you know, may, you know, need you to explain, and you got to do that part, right? Yeah, I think you do those things, and remember what your purpose is there. You know what I mean? And if your purpose is just to get rich, then get rich. You know what I mean? Like, remember what your purpose is, because I feel like that can be energizing. And then take care of yourself outside of work, right? Like, that'll help you to continue to go on. Because if you're like not taking care of yourself, you're just gonna get frustrated and probably snap on somebody at some point, just because you get tired of it. Like, you get tired of people asking if they can touch your hair, or why do you put this in your hair, or why do you wear that, or why? Or you get tired of that type of stuff. And so you get so like ready to just like snap on people. So to avoid that, make sure you're taking care of yourself. And then also set those boundaries. You know, that also helps, setting good boundaries at the workplace.
Cool. Well, Mark, I've loved having you on. Before we get off, do you have any questions you want to ask me?
Yeah, I do have a question I want to ask you. I want to ask you more about how you've been able to manage, you know, pursuing engineering opportunities, but then still building out. So as I've known you online, at least, I've seen you always talking about things like, for instance, the whole, you know, buying or acquiring smaller apps, and then wanting to build that out, right? And then I know you had the Black End Cloud project. So you had like a lot of different things you were doing. How do you find the energy to manage that type of expenditure of your like resources and time, and still be able to like pursue engineering career, et cetera?
Well, one, I really don't sleep. you know, you say you can choose like performance, social life, and sleep. I choose social life and performance, so. I do a lot of networking. You know, pre-COVID, I'm like always out. Like, you know, I go out to bars a lot, but I don't drink a lot. Like, I'll have maybe one drink, and that's a maybe. Like, I like to go play pool and stuff, but bars, there's a lot of programmers in bars, so I'm always meeting somebody who can help me with something. You know, or you know, they might need some money, you know, $20-$25 an hour. Might need them for a 40-hour project. Cool, I'll give them $500. It's worth it to me to get the project out, because I'm gonna make at least $3,000 off of it. At the end, very least, I can sell it to somebody. So, you know, it's an investment. And then because I do have, you know, the skills myself, and I do have people who do work for me and stuff, like I said earlier, I have a lot of idle time when I'm not actively talking to clients and stuff. I'm pretty much just sitting at home. So I don't like just sitting around. So I'm always coding. I come up with ideas every day, and I just tinker. Like, that's actually my goal, is once JCareer Solutions gets to the point where I can actually hire a CEO, and then I can sit on the board. I just want to be a full-time tinker. You know, I'm a scientist at heart. I love physics. I love math. I love robotics and coding. So that's actually what I'm working towards. So I don't have to work, and I can just make shit all day.
The dream. That's the dream, to just not work on stuff because you have to. You're just making stuff, just experimenting. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm just now starting to get that glimpse of it, where like I'm having a majority of the time I can sit around and work on stuff. And yeah, I basically make my schedule so that I have all of my meetings over a 2-day period. I schedule my client calls on one day and my other meetings on another day. So, you know, majority of the week, unless there's a deadline going on, I need to help one of my engineers with or something, I'm already kind of getting that time. So I'm just, like I said, working to build up the revenue to the point where I can hire a CEO or a president, somebody can oversee the day-to-day operations, and then go on to the next thing.
Righteous. Love it.
Cool, man. Well, why don't you plug yourself, your social media and everything for everybody who's listening, and then we'll wrap up the episode.
Absolutely. So first off, again, thank you for having me, and thanks everybody for listening. You can find me online everywhere at Mark Texan. That's MarkTexon. And check out the stuff that I'm cooking up on my newsletter. You want to be a part of this. I'm doing something very, very special with my folks who subscribe to my newsletter on my email list. So you can find that at, you can go to MarkTexan.com and find it, or go to MarkTexan.dev. Either one, you can find me there. And you definitely want to be signed up, because you don't want to miss the magic that I'm cooking up, because I got something very special planned for Q2 and Q3 of this year, and you want to be there.
All right, you heard the man, everyone. Check out that newsletter. I will put a link in the show notes so you can find and click on that directly. And once again, this has been another episode of Code Life with Jerome Parker, aka Master Shake. Mark, thank you for coming on. Really enjoyed it. Would love to have you on at some point later in the year, just to check in with you. And